Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And that day is Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Gold today. It was down big early this morning, had a nice little turnaround for gold today, up $390. $390 on gold at $1,168.80. Silver's up 8 cents at $15.99 off the high, though. What was the high? $16.09. It's trying. Platinum down 8 at $9.93, and palladium was down 10 at $6.86. USDX today down 0.17, 94.71. Crude oil down 60.60. at $46.50, and the paper markets today, they were all down, but nothing big, nothing major. Dow, 49 points, 17,082. NASDAQ, 42, it's 47.96. S&P, down 13 at 2003. 10-year yield, 0.03, 2.06. Euro, still 114 at 0.25. And European markets were all down slightly. So I thought we'd have a little bit bigger moves in the market today. But nice day for gold, $1,168.80. I'll take it. But the only news that I saw that was sort of interesting is this ex-Anglo-Irish bank chief. Now, we always talk about none of these bankers, and especially yesterday when Greg Hunter was on, we talked about, you know, Ben Bernanke talking about none of these guys 2008 have gone to jail and so forth. And here's the guy, Anglo-Irish bank chief. Unsealed court documents showed that Ireland hopes to prosecute the disgraced former chief executive of Anglo-Irish Bank for 33 counts of fraud, forgery, and other crimes if he is sent back to Dublin. Right now he's residing in Boston. And he went to
Washington, D.C., where he would blend in with the crowd.
Yeah, well, that crowd is everywhere, Al. He fled to the United States in 2009. As Ireland nationalized toxic debt, crippled the Anglo at an estimated taxpayer cost of 29.3 billion euros, which is about 34 billion in U.S. dollars. He talks that he insists he has a right to U.S. residency and bankruptcy protection. He was arrested Saturday at his 4,000 square foot, $2 million home in the upmarket Boston suburb of Wellesley.
Well, he certainly sounds like an honest politician to me.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I mean, they must pay their politicians very well in Ireland, because how else would he come up with the $4 million? Would you say 4,000 square feet and $2 million?
He faces an unlimited term of imprisonment if convicted of fraudulently concealing Anglo's loss of deposits. So I just thought it was interesting. Here's a poor guy. He's probably just a scapegoat. Well, we need to send somebody to jail. Hey, he's living in Boston. Let's bring him back. Or he's done something a lot worse, and they need him back in Ireland. But another news report I saw today, Al. France, they're looking to sell some new ships to Russia after canceling their initial warship deal. And so they're building, France is building relationships with Russia. And I also saw where they're building relationships with the Saudis, that they're selling them all kinds of military equipment and ships. And it's interesting to see France make these contracts worth the billions of dollars.
France is broke, though. They're in great financial stress, and they'll do business with anybody
that's
who's got the money.
Yep,
that's what's going on. And it may even be that France is selling some of this stuff dirt cheap just to raise some capital.
Could be. Which makes you wonder why you would want to. Getting it dirt cheap kind of makes you wonder what the quality of the item is also. But the warships that the deal with Russia was canceled mainly because of the event in Ukraine, they're actually selling those ships now to Egypt. And I thought that was interesting also. So they did find a buyer for them, not Russia, but to Egypt. And I started looking up Egypt and
the
military.
You know what's going to happen then? Egypt will turn around and sell them to Russia and probably make 10%.
Or maybe Egypt will sell them to someone else. But it was interesting. Egypt has quite a military, and I didn't realize it was as strong and as big as it is. So, anyway.
They've got to maintain order one way or another, and they're not going to do it. They aren't going to bribe the majority of the people. They have to intimidate them in order to maintain some semblance of order over there. They've had, you know, with the Arab Spring, few years ago, they had a shot at some sort of liberalization in Egypt, and I don't think Egypt can withstand. I don't know how it all worked out. Ultimately, I don't know that people's lives were improved. Maybe they were, but I think ultimately they just laid the hammer down and said they got rid of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're going to have order in this country. And I assume they're running what is probably a pretty strong police state. I don't mean that they're all over everybody. I don't mean that they're, you know. But if push comes to shove, I think the government is going to shove hard over there. So.
And here I got something interesting. I did not know this. Maybe we should do a segment. I did not know this. Cubans are coming to Florida in their golden years to retire. Why?
To collect. I know what it is.
They can tap into the U.S. government assistance, even though they never lived or even worked here.
Yeah.
The number of Cubans arriving over the age of 60 grew fivefold since 2010. And this is according to state refugee data. There's at least 185 of them that were in their 80s or 90s. They qualify immediately for food stamps and Medicaid. And if they're over 65 with little or no income, they also can collect a monthly check up to $733 in SSI, Supplemental Security Income.
It's got to be like going to heaven
compared
to what things were in Cuba.
This is a special status Cuba has enabling their elderly to retire in the U.S. all paid for by the taxpayer. The number of Cubans immigrating after age 60 and eligibility, we talked about, have increased fivefold since 2010. And they're getting cheap apartments. They're getting food stamps. They tell their friends in Cuba, hey, come on over.
Yeah, I know.
Tar.
You got another Mariel. Mariel, wasn't that the name of it? The invasion of Cubans that came over during the Carter administration? Mariel Boatlift or something like that? They're trying to bring Cubans in at the time.
Well, here's a guy. He lived, he lives in Miami on food stamps, Medicaid, SSI. Said it wasn't that bad in Cuba, but it's better here. It's like, yeah, another woman, 75, to be near her three children. Subsidized apartment, food stamps.
Hey, why don't you get close enough to your children where they support you?
Yeah.
You want to be close to your children? Say, hey, kids, I'm coming to you. You can support me. See if they still want you around. If you say, hey, kids, I'm moving in and I'm going to let the taxpayers support me and we can meet once a month.
Yeah. Mm. But they're eligible for government assistance for up to 7 years after they arrive in the U.S. and longer if they become citizens. So here's a woman who's getting the $700 a month in SSI says, oh, I want to become a citizen. Yeah, because you can get your you get the extension on the benefits. That's the only reason. I mean, it's just.
And it's the sort of thing, you know, I get upset about illegal aliens coming into this country, but they are not really the problem. All right. Again, I've used the analogy a number of times. You go out and spread $100 bills on your front lawn and go to bed at night. You get up in the morning, the $100 bills are gone. You can't just complain about the thieves that stole the $100 bills. You got to sit back and say, what's wrong with me that I'm leaving $100 bills spread around on my front lawn? Now I'm going to spread them another night. Tonight I'm going to spread some more and complain about the thieves in the neighborhood. The problem we have with illegal aliens is not with the illegal aliens. The problem we have is with the Congress and the Senate and the White House who refuse to do anything about them. They're the ones that are making it possible for the illegal aliens to come in here and collect Social Security or whatever else. It's the government. The government is the problem. The illegal aliens, on one hand, you can't blame them. Sure, if you're going to spread $100 bills on the ground, of course they're going to come in and help themselves. You can't act surprised about that. The problem is the government. They allow it to happen. They cause these problems, and that's what needs to be changed. What we really need, you know, Trump is talking about some sort of a wall between Mexico and the United States, and I don't doubt that that's a good idea, but I think it would be more effective if we could build a wall between Washington, D.C. and the United States of America, and we keep everybody inside Washington, D.C., and they can have whatever rules and regulations they want on their side of the wall, and on our side of the wall, we'll run the country the way we want it. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it's an idea whose time has come.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I just thought.
It's a shorter wall. It's not be easier to build a wall around Washington, D.C. than it is all the way from Brownsville out to San Diego. Faster, cheaper, probably more effective. We probably have more to fear from our congressmen, senators, and presidents than we do from our illegal aliens.
Well, that might have worked 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, but... Anyway.
You never know.
What's next?
There's an article that's just kind of tongue-in-cheek from the United Kingdom's Daily Mail. Headline is, Trump says people will turn off tomorrow's, this was yesterday's article, Democratic primary debate because he's not in it. And CNN says he might be right. That's the headline. According to Trump, he says, I think people are going to turn it on for a couple of minutes and then fall asleep. He claimed that a person at CNN said, we have to put Donald Trump in this debate. We're going to die with it, meaning they don't expect anybody to listen to tonight's debate. First two GOP debates drew 24 million and 23 million viewers, largely on the strength of Trump's participation. This is just, again... Tuesday's first Democratic presidential primary debate will be a low-rating snooze fest, according to Donald Trump. And CNN executive is hinting he might be right. And the debate will air on CNN and feature Democrat frontrunner Hillary Clinton at center stage. I don't want to say this is in a braggadocious way. Now, this is coming from Trump. And, of course, he would never say anything in a braggadocious way. But he says, I don't want to say this in a braggadocious way, but a person at CNN and a couple other people said, we have to put Donald Trump in this debate. We're going to die with it. So, blah, blah, blah. He's just kind of laughing about what's going to happen, potentially. That's his opinion. But here's another one. This is a more serious article, and this is from the Washington Examiner. And the headline is, why are Democrats hiding Hillary from voters? And the article says, drama over Tuesday night's Democrat debate has disinterred an important question from liberals. Why is the party establishment so scared of having voters see their presidential candidates on TV? What an odd question. But it goes on, says, as we've noted before, the Democrats have limited the number of their debates to just six, compared to the Republicans' 11. Even worse, they've scheduled them for time slots when few other than hardcore supporters will watch. Tuesday's debate will be the most accessible of the lot, even though it's scheduled to begin during Game 4 of a drama-filled Mets-Dodgers National League Division Series. The next debate is scheduled for a college football Saturday night in November. The third is scheduled for the Saturday before Christmas. The fourth takes place during a three-day weekend in January. They're trying to say these debates have been, you know, the Democratic Party is apparently either incompetent or they are intentionally scheduling the debates for times when most people aren't going to bother to watch them. The article continues. It says these are not primetime slots. It'll be interesting to see if any campaigns buy ad time during these debates with the audience so scanty. The Democrat left is crying foul, as well it might, for it has good grounds to suspect an institutional effort to help Hillary Clinton skate through the primary season without having to engage her Democratic opponents. They are, it's a DNC vice chairwoman, Representative Tulsi Gabbard, dared suggest the television interview would be more more debates would be healthy for her party. She was heavy-handedly disinvited from Tuesday's debate by DNC chairwoman Devi Wasserman Schultz. She's been run off. They don't want more debates. But in the Democratic Party today, that you're going to run into trouble if you question Hillary's inevitability. And they go on. They're telling the debate will not permit candidates to argue with each other as they did under CNN's prompting in the second Republican debate, which is to say they won't let all the others go after Hillary Clinton. Well, the point to this article is they're saying that the Democratic Party, the leadership, the wheelers and dealers and real shakers up there have decided Hillary's going to be the candidate, and they're doing whatever they can to make sure that none of the other candidates really catch fire and challenge Hillary. But they got a problem. What are they going to do about Bernie Sanders? Bernie's already caught fire, right? And he is attracting people and money. And it's all very, very interesting. We're going to take a break here for some commercials in a moment. And
you have to look to see who's moderating these debates, too. They're going to protect her all the way. And, you know, they're not going to allow Bernie Sanders a chance or any of the other two or three, to really say anything. And, they will make her come. You know, media will do what media does. She will come out smelling like a rose temporarily.
Yeah, I don't think so. She'll come out smelling like an outhouse. It's had a bad,
we can only hope,
big dose of cheap perfume. That's what
we can only hope.
We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cedarstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I would like to extend the special we had yesterday. We had 20 Morgan silver dollars. These are the pre-1921 circulation. You're getting a lot of nice dates in the late 1880s, and or I should say the late 1800s, you'll get some 1890s and so forth. So a lot of nice mixed dates in the Morgan silver dollars pre-1921. You won't get any 1921 dates for the Morgan silver dollars. And a quarter ounce of the modern issue American Gold Eagle, that is a quarter ounce, and your total is $900. And both gold and silver is higher today. This reflects yesterday's prices. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to the program and the archives right from the website. And I did have some comments yesterday about Greg had seemed a little garbled for some reason. We haven't figured out the reason why, but we hope to have Greg back on later on in the month, in the next 2 weeks, so and he'll be able to spend more time and we can go over some of the things. But mainly we talked about yesterday John Williams and his and his numbers and his predictions, and you know, certainly coming to, we're already in a recession, and it will be declared we're in a recession, of course, so later on in the first of next year. So it was a great interview as usual, and I'm sorry folks couldn't hear it, and we'll get Greg back on here in this next couple of weeks.
Well, when we talk about we're going to have a recession, Melody, the modern term, the politically correct term for recession is a recovery. See? When they say we're having a recovery, they really mean we're having a recession. And if they actually admit we're having a recession, that means we're probably in a depression. Do you understand that now, Melody? Does that make any sense?
Perhaps.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps.
You sound skeptical. You know,
we've never, yeah, and you're, I mean, you are right to, I mean, to agree. We've never come out of the recessions that, you know, were created because, and you're right. They call them recoveries. They call them, you know, rebounds and so forth.
It's just
and,
an extended recession.
A little bit better recession.
And things were getting dramatically worse. Then we'd call it a recession. But if we've gone through the dramatically worst part and we've just kind of stagnated, and it's not getting a lot worse, not getting any better, but it's, we'll call it a recovery.
Yeah.
We were talking before the commercial break, the article from the Washington Examiner, headline, Why Are Democrats Hiding Hillary from Voters? You know, one of the things that crosses my mind, if this article is valid, and it's true that the real puppet masters at the Democratic Party have made up their mind that Hillary's going to be the candidate. And what do you think are the chances that Hillary has been fed copies of the questions that she's going to be asked during tonight's debate?
Well, I think they all are to some degree.
Well, I think they can guess what the questions are going to be, but I mean,
if they're that brain dead,
the question
they do
that Joe was going to ask you at about 8:30 tonight. You know, how much you can kind of guess what people are going to ask. But I'm wondering if, even if the, you know, Hillary's got a lot of baggage, including Benghazi and the email, and I don't know what all you can dig up on her. I wonder how much of that will come up in the course of tonight's debate. If the candidates can't debate among themselves, and no one up on the stage is likely to say, hey, Hillary, what about Benghazi? Will any of the interviewers, the Anderson Cooper, whoever, will the moderators, will? Do you think they'll ask any of the really hard questions, or will they just play patty cake and make nice?
What was that?
I said, do you think that moderators will ask any really tough questions of Hillary?
I don't think.
They're just going to play patty cake with her and just trying to play nice. And we'll probably hear a question or two about Benghazi, but will it be hammered or will it be just kind of mentioned?
I think that the debate tonight is going to be pretty much like the first Republican debate. It was just pretty much a feel each candidate out and so forth. I don't think there's going to be any major, you know, in depth. I mean, heck, they cut the debate short a whole hour. I don't think there's going to be any, you know, hard questions to any of the candidates. I think they'll, you know, maybe in order to shy away from her, perhaps they'll introduce the other two candidates a little bit more. And, you know, they'll do just, you know, they'll keep their favorite on top and hope that she can carry it. But, you know, I don't think she'll be able to carry it. I think people see through her and, you know, she's not going to be the nominee. And I was reading an article today about the Republicans, and it was interesting because there was probably six or seven of the candidates now on the Republican side that, you know, basically they're all there and they'll be throwing their support behind Bush. And that's why Bush made a comment the other day. He says, well, you know, he says, I'm just waiting for this to play out a little bit. And, you know, he's waiting for all those other candidates to drop out of the race and support him. And then he'll have all this other support, and that's where it'll get thick. And, you know, a lot of people think that he will be the next nominee. And I find that hard to believe, but hey.
I think both of these political parties have something like a death wish, and it's not clear at times whether they're more interested in killing themselves or killing the United States of America. But they do stupid things. I mean, the Republicans, they have made some incredibly bad choices for candidates in the last couple of elections.
The Democrats
look like they're getting ready to do the same thing again this year. Now the question is, will the Republicans be able to, the wheeler and dealers of the Republican Party, will they be able to snatch the nomination away from Donald Trump and give it to Jeb Bush? Or, I've got an article here from the Mises Institute, and the headline is, Ben Carson upsets mainstream media, openly questions fiat money. Neurosurgeon turns presidential candidate Ben Carson has been under attack this week by our politically correct enforcers in the media. While most of the media scorn has been directed at Carson's defense of gun ownership, right? Okay, great. Carson, he's in favor of Second Amendment rights and so on. Most of the media scorn has been directed at Carson's defense of gun ownership following last week's shooting in Oregon. Matt O'Brien of the Washington Post slapped at Carson for flirting with the gold standard. In an article on Friday criticizing Jeb Bush for not condemning the gold standard harshly enough, Bush only offered a timid, I don't think so, when asked whether the U.S. should make such a move. O'Brien highlighted some surprisingly sound comments by Dr. Carson made earlier this week during an interview with National Public Radio. While discussing the nation's current debt, Carson said, the only reason that we can sustain that kind of debt is because of our artificial ability to print money to create what we think is wealth, but is not wealth, because it's based upon our faith and credit. You know, we decoupled it from the domestic gold standard in 1933. He's talking about decoupled the dollar from the domestic gold standard in 1933 and from the international gold standard in 1971. And since that time, it's not based on anything. Why would we be continuing to do that? I look at this and I'm thinking to myself, what an election. I mean, we got Donald Trump shaking things up, but we've also got Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist, who's giving Hillary Clinton a run for her money. And now we have what appears to be a gold bug, Dr. Ben Carson, running as a Republican. Who would have believed that sort of variety was even possible just last April, 6 months ago? How much money could I have won if I'd bet that the 2016 presidential election would have as great a variety of candidates as it has today? Not the number of candidates, the variety. We have a guy who, Bernie Sanders, he's got a shot at causing a political revolution in this country if he can attract enough support from the unemployed. We got Donald Trump, big, braggadocious, even if he denies it. He's putting on a sideshow all by himself, and now Ben Carson is saying he's talking about going back to a gold standard. This is an election that is largely out of control. As hard as the Republican wheelers and dealers want to give the nomination to Jeb Bush, and as determined as the Democrats are to give it to Hillary Clinton, there are a lot of options. And we haven't even, it's more than a year before the election. People are showing up 20,000 people at a time for rallies.
We got a whole year of this, Al.
I understand that.
Oh, my.
Well, I don't know what the history of these rallies are, but my recollection, it's not something I've studied. I could be mistaken. But in previous elections, a year before the election, you couldn't even get, a handful of people.
Well, I think that's more frightening. I think that's more.
Speak, and now they're pulling in 20,000, 30,000 audiences of 20,000, 30,000 people.
Well,
it's amazing to me.
To me, it's not amazing. To me, it's frightening that Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist and proud of it, draws that kind of a number to me, that's more frightening. If the election was held, if the election was held today, I would go for Ben Carson all day long, because I think all these guys are, you know, they go in there and perhaps with all these dreams of what they can do, I still believe, you know, the large degree of it, they're puppets. You know, it's all part of the agenda. However, I also
usually
let me say this. I also believe it's a spiritual battle, and I think we do need, in order to change anything, and any for any changes to have accomplished changes, you need someone in there that has at least claims, or
they all claim it.
No,
but
I believe Ben Carson.
I think Carson is a decent man.
I believe he is.
I think Carson is a decent man, and I don't get the impression that he has any guile, that he's trying to deceive anyone. He's selling this, here I am, this is what I do, this is what I believe in. And he's, you know, if you'd like to vote for me, please do. That's kind of the way he comes across to me, at least. And I don't think he's going to try to trick anyone or deceive anyone. He's just saying, look, I think this is the right thing to do.
Wasn't that about time we have somebody like that?
Someone
that can bring a little faith back into things, to have a little more support than just...
It's a good idea, but, you know, it's one of those things, what I'm reminded of with Bernie Sanders is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. All right? A lot of people say, well, that's a dumb comparison. Maybe not. Franklin Delano Roosevelt rose to power during the Great Depression, which was characterized by massive unemployment. And as I pointed out, that article from Michael Snyder we read last week, Michael Snyder is saying, he's calculating that there are nearly 103 million people who are of working age who are not employed in this country at this time. Mm-hmm. Not all of them are unemployed in the sense that they don't have a job. Some of them are housewives and whatever. But still, this is a massive voting block, and it is the only person that they can really expect to do them any good. They've got to have some food. They've got to have some money to support the family, pay the rent, put food on the table. Nobody's got anything for the unemployed with the exception of the socialist Bernie Sanders. And from that perspective, that's the biggest, that 103 million, if that's really a voting block, I think it is, at least a lot of it is. We'll watch and see how much it turns into a single voting block. It may be a voting block of 70 million. But again, only 61 million people voted Republican in the 2012 election. And only 66 million voted Democrat. Bernie's got a chance. Bernie's got a chance of moving that. And it's the kind of thing, and it's coming because of the great unemployment, which is part of what's happened because the right wing has been so busy getting everybody super rich in the top 1%, the top 10th of a percent, that they've left nothing left. There's nothing left for the poor and the middle class. Republicans have built this by passing these laws that favor the corporations and the super rich. And now we have this massive voting block that's beginning to coalesce. And I think that is what's driving Bernie Sanders' success.
I don't know, Al. Maybe
that's true, and maybe it's not true, but I think it's at least possible.
Al, maybe it's just a free night out for them. They get to go to a Coliseum, and it doesn't cost them anything. I bet they even had coffee and tea there for them.
Oh, you ye of little faith.
Yes. There's
a serious possibility, at least in my opinion. We've got a chance to see something. And I'm not in favor of this. I don't want to see socialism, but I'd rather see socialism. I'll guarantee you that. If I had to choose between socialism and fascism, I would jump on the socialist bandwagon. I won't jump on either one of them, but, you know, which one is worse? We'll figure that out maybe in the next segment, maybe in the next program, or maybe over the course of next year. But we're going to take a break right now for some more commercials. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hello, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and got an article here from Business Insider. Headline is Citibank. William Weider has called it, "We're about to go into a global recession." Ooh, no kidding. Citi's global chief economist, William Weider, published a note to investors saying he believed it was likely that the world was about to sink into a global recession, and that it may already be in that recession. We've talked about this in the past number of times. It's always been an insight. For me, it was a great insight. Maybe not a great insight, but a good insight. Read a book back years ago. Don't remember which one it was. But the author pointed out that in retrospect, we sit back and say the Great Depression started in 1929. But according to this author, and I don't even remember who it was, but I still remember the observation, he said, in fact, there wasn't even a general consensus that we were in a depression until about 1933. In retrospect, we look back and say, oh, we went into a depression in 1929 as if someone flipped a light switch and all of a sudden it was dark out. It wasn't that way. We kind of eased into it over a period of several years, and after 4 years of what in retrospect we say was the depression, people generally agreed, yeah, you know, you're right, I think we are in a depression. The point being, as this chief economist, William Boyder, as he's saying, we may already be in a recession. I would argue we may already be in a depression. When the historians look back and they, at this period, are they going to say that we had a recession starting in 2007 and 8? Or are they going to say we had a depression starting in 2007 and 8 that was mitigated for a number of years, 6, 7, 8 years? They were able to hold it back to some degree. But where do we assign, when we write the history books, where do we assign that this is when the light switch was flipped? 2007, 2008, 2011, 2013, where do we assign that? It's important to recognize that we can't really tell where we are in the economy at any given moment. The people who talk about it, and people say we're in a recession, we're in a depression, we're in a recovery, the economy is getting stronger, there's a bunch, nobody really knows what's going on here. not for an absolute fact. And if they can't tell you for a fact where we are right now, then they have to admit that they can't control what we're doing. They're like a pilot in an airplane, and he can't tell you for sure whether he's on the ground headed for the hangar, or if he's just taken off and he's in the air or he's coming in for a landing. All they know is the propellers are turning, and they're not too sure how fast we're going, and are we on the ground, in the air, landing, crashing, taking off, what are we doing? If they can't tell you where we are, they can't really be in control. They act like they're in control, they claim to be in control, they want to be in control, but if they can't really tell you, you know, then they don't really know. We're going up, down, or sideways. In any case, Bueter, just this guy Bueter, says that we may already be in that recession. You know, it's interesting to me, the article is interesting to me, because there are a lot of mainstream media experts who are declaring or admitting that we're likely to soon slide into another recession. I could be right. There's not much doubt that the U.S. and global economies are slowing and heading for trouble. But the question is, you know, they're willing to admit that there's a problem coming up. People talk about it for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. We've had open admissions, mainstream media. We're headed for a stock market crash, at least a correction, not necessarily a crash, a significant decline. We see it in the mainstream media. Folks like ourselves have been pointing this out and predicting it for, who knows, months if not years, that the fundamentals indicate, look, we're going to have some big trouble here. Now the mainstream is coming around. But are we really sliding toward another recession? A lot of them will admit that right now. Or are we sliding toward a greater depression? And that's a big question. If all we're going to get is a recession, we'll get through it. Depression is going to be more difficult, depending on how severe it becomes. And it really does look like we're going to see it on a global basis, not just at the United States. We're going to see something happening globally. And we can expect serious changes. You know, as long as the world sits back and says, well, we're not in a recession right now. We're not going into a depression. Whether we are or we aren't, so long as we think we're not, then we are not predisposed to engage in revolutionary politics. But if we sit back and we reach a moment where we sit back and we say, no, wait a second, we're in a depression. Under that scenario where you're more, and it's not just here. It'll be in Europe, it'll be in China, it'll be around the world. I doubt that we'll be able to point to many countries that escape, because we're all so tied together and interbound that, you know, if one of them goes into depression, the rest of them will probably follow. So I had a point, and that point has escaped me, Melody.
Well,
I'm somewhere with that, but we're going to have to wait, kind of like Halley's Comet, until it comes again, comes around another time. The point is that if we are going to see a global recession, or even global depression, then we are likely to see some revolutionary times globally. All right? We're going to see the sort of thing I'm talking about. Bernie Sanders representing the unemployed. His socialism may be representing the unemployed. That's the way it looks to me. Maybe yes, maybe no. But I'm looking at that and I'm thinking that's reality. He could, you know, again, perfect storm kind of situation. We have Bernie Sanders running as a socialist, and all of a sudden we've got 103 million people aren't employed. And we said, oh my gosh, we have a certain amount of coincidental factors coming together like a perfect storm, and we can sit back and wonder how far can this go. Bernie's done spectacularly well so far. He may do terrible in the debates. If he is, his candidacy may be written off. But if he does okay in the candidacy, in the debates, his candidacy is only going to get stronger or at least I suspect that's what's going to happen. But the same thing could happen maybe in China. And whatever attempts they've had to liberalize and open the country up to some sort of prosperity and material freedom, they may clamp down in the midst of massive unemployment, massive global recession, maybe global depression. We could see revolution take place in China. We could see something like that in Europe. It's hard to point to a country, if we're going to see a global problem, what country can we point to and say, this one will be okay? They're not going to see any political turmoil in this country. Canada? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm just saying, my main point is that we are coming into a year that we just might see the beginning of leftist revolutions that could take place on a global basis. And they will be driven by unemployment. The same thing that put Franklin Delano Roosevelt into office and gave him such enormous power. There were too many people unemployed. And why do we have too many people unemployed? And the answer is in part because the Republican Party has been captured by a bunch of neo-fascists. They've done everything they can to make sure that the wealth goes to the top tenth of a percent or 1%. And they've left, when they have this income distribution problem, people talk about it. And we can justify it, we can condemn it, we can do a bunch of things, but here's the reality. Top 1% owns something like half of all of wealth in the world, or in this country. When they do that, there's not enough left for people at the bottom. And by becoming increasingly greedy, and just say, well, more for us, more for us. We've got the power in the Republic. We've taken over the Republican Party. We can buy and sell congressmen and senators. We can get more laws passed to put more money in our pocket and to heck with the poor and to heck with the middle class. To the extent that they do that, they have built a class of unemployed. And these people want a job. They want money. Some of them are greedy. Some of them are lazy. Some of them are stupid and ignorant, a bunch of other stuff. But some of them want a job. They want something that they can take a little pride in, they can find a little dignity in, and maybe even, you know, a chicken in every pot. Sanders is offering that. And there's going to be a lot of people that will respond to that offer. And the reason it's happening is because the right wing has gone too far. That's all. They said, hooray, let's put more money in the pockets of the too big to fail and too big to jail. Well, fine, do it. But what are you going to do about 103 million people who are not employed? Got a solution to that? And the Republicans don't. In the same sense that the Republicans didn't have a solution when Franklin Delano Roosevelt assumed power. Somewhere along the line, you got to watch this unemployment. And it's not enough just to falsify the figures and sit back and say, well, we only have 8 million unemployed. No, we don't. The government has been intentionally lying and understating the number of people who are unemployed in this country. And everybody knows that. They claim it's down around 5%. It's actually 23% or maybe more. Those lies will not put food on the tables for these poor people. And those poor people are going to look for somebody. And when they be, who will, or at least claims they will. And so what I'm just trying to communicate, this is just so strange, and it's part of life. I don't care who's in power. I don't care if it's left or the right. They always go too far. Neither side ever knows when to quit. No matter how much you got, no matter how much you stole, no matter how much your retirement is supposedly funded and how little you have to work before you can retire and how much you can make, everybody who gets into power says, we can take more. And when they do, inevitably they create another class of unemployed people. And when they do, something's going to happen. That that unemployment is conducive to the kind of revolution we saw in the New Deal. The kind of unemployment we have right now. Whether it'll happen, don't know, can't say, but you know, it's something to watch for. And you know, you talk about interesting times. Well, we certainly live in them. Again, this is an election. We've got a black man who's a gold bug. He's running for the presidency. We've got a braggadocious billionaire. He's running for the presidency. We've got an avowed socialist. He's running for the presidency. And we have people in positions of power who are trying to make sure that Hillary is inevitable. And maybe Jeb Bush is inevitable. I don't know that anything's going to be inevitable in this election. I think this is going to be one of those, before this is done, 2016 is going to be a year to remember. We're going to see some things happen where people are just, you're going to sit there and your jaw is going to drop. And I think we're going to see things that we aren't even anticipating just yet. So, what should we do, Melody?
Are you talking just strictly the elections, or?
I'm talking about elections. I'm talking about life. Should we just get a big bowl of popcorn and watch the whole thing unfold on TV, or what do we do?
I think we're coming
into a time of great turmoil.
I think so too, and I think a lot of it will be, you know, it needs to be done prior to Obama leaving office, and I think that's a key date. And we started seeing the volatility begin this summer, and you're going to continue to see it grow. Now, with an election year, as always, it'll be interesting to see if they try to hold it together, or will they let it go? And I don't think they're going to have a. I don't think there's going to be a choice. And once they begin talking about exactly what our debt is and how high they would have to raise the debt ceiling, I think it's going to put a whole new spin on the election for next year.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, just Ben Carson talking about we should go back to a gold standard. How long has it been since anyone has argued that we should have a gold standard in public office at the level of the presidency or even Senate or Congress? We've had Ron Paul, all right, he's been there. But other than that, This has not been a popular idea, and we're seeing evidence of it. I don't mean it's going to succeed, but the fact that we're even talking about it is evidence that something strange is going on. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk more about what may be the strangeness in our economy and our political system and our future. Melody and I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.